for them to get zapped off to an island and a palm tree. But it's not going to happen. The stone is dangerous in the wrong hands, and it's my job to put it out of circulation.
Are you telling me you have a work ethic?
No, I'm telling you my boss is almost as crazy as Rutherford, and I wouldn't want to piss him off.
What would happen?
I'd have to fly commercial for starters.
Gee, that's awful.
You want to try it with a monkey?
Diesel was back on his heels, staring at the treasure bins.
We should take this.
The treasure?
Yeah, all 25 million of it.
That would be stealing, I said.
This stuff has been stolen so many times over the centuries, I don't think it matters anymore.
What will we do with it?
I guess we could eventually donate it to a museum, but in the short term, it might turn out to be useful. We might be able to bargain with it. Or maybe we just use it to make the bad guys mad, throw them off their game while we search for the stone.
I didn't want to steal the treasure. I wanted to get out of the vault. I wanted to go home or back to the bakery. I wanted to be someplace that felt safe and happy. Just thinking about stealing the treasure makes me nauseous, I said.
You're probably just hungry. I'll buy you an ice cream cone when we're done.
I glanced at my watch. If we were going to do this, we needed to get it done quickly. The bins look heavy, I said. How are we going to get them out of here?
The same way they got them in here. Hand truck. There's one in the corner. It's still got three bins stacked up on it.
Then what? We can't truck them all the way to the Wessel house.
Call Clara and tell her to bring the van.
20 minutes later, we had all the bins plus the hand truck loaded into the van. Diesel locked the vault and the back door to the bank, and we took off.
Where am I going? Clara asked. We need to stash this somewhere, Diesel said.
Clara stopped at an intersection.
We could put it in the speakeasy. There's a second entrance in Gramps' garage. No one would see us unloading.
Diesel shoved the last bin into place against the bar.
It should be okay to leave these here short term. I have other, more pressing problems.
Such as? I asked him.
Food. I'm starving. I need a burger. One of those fancy little meat pies isn't going to do it.
I'll drive you back to the bakery and you can get your car, Clara said. We filed out of the speakeasy into the short sloping tunnel that led to the one-car garage. Clara was parked behind the rascal scooter. How does Gramps get his rascal to the aquarium? I asked Clara.
Benita has a van with a hydraulic lift, and I hate to say this, but sometimes Gramps sets off on his own.
It doesn't look like he's home. There aren't any lights on, and I didn't hear anyone walking overhead.
He has a heavy social calendar, Clara said. He's probably at the senior center cheating at cards.
10 minutes later, Diesel parked his Porsche in a lot off Lafayette Street, and we walked the short distance to a pub. They better have ice cream here, I said. You promise me ice cream.
They have ice cream everywhere.
We slid into a corner booth and ordered burgers, fries, onion rings, and beer. Diesel waited for the waitress to leave before looking over at me.
Call Nurgle and see what the deal is with Ammon. I'm sure he's tapped into hospital gossip.
Why can't you make the call?
Nurgle thinks you're cute, Diesel said. He's more likely to do something unpleasant for you.
This was obnoxious, but probably true. Hey, I said when Nurgle picked up.
Let me guess, Nurgle said. You want to know about Martin Ammon?
Yes, how did you know that?
Everyone wants to know. My mother called me.
Is he dead?
No, he's in a private room with some idiot in a suit standing guard at his door.
Does he think he's a dog?
A what?
Dog. Like, is he barking or anything?
I haven't heard anything about barking. The information I got is that they're keeping him here overnight for observation. He has a concussion.
Nothing unusual?
There's a rumor going around that he was covered in pink rabbit fur when he was brought in, but that's about it.
I thanked Nurgle and relayed the information to Diesel.
So the stone isn't on Ammon, and it's not with Rutherford, and it's not in the vault, Diesel said. My second best guess would be the Marblehead house.
I see where this is going, and I'm not searching the Marblehead house until I've had my ice cream.
You can take your time with the ice cream, Diesel said. I think it will be just about impossible to search the Marblehead house without the distraction of a party and a fire. We're going to have to find a way to make the stone come to us.
That shouldn't be difficult. Ammon will get out of the hospital and retrieve the stone. All we have to do is snatch Ammon and rip the stone out of his demon hands.
Yeah, why didn't I think of that?
Or we could snatch Rutherford, I said. He probably helped hide the stone.
Even better.
The waitress brought our food, and we stopped talking and concentrated on eating. Anything else? She asked when we were done. Ice cream, I said. We have vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, coffee, tutti frutti, butter pecan, and chocolate chip. Yes, I said. That's what I want. Which one? All of them. 20 minutes later, Diesel was slouched in the booth, smiling at me.
You ate all that ice cream, he said. Impressive.
Yeah, but I'm feeling sick.
My original plan was to have you lure Rutherford away from the hospital tonight so you could sweet-talk the information out of him. I'm thinking that just went out the window.
Upchucking Tutti Frutti seemed like an okay trade-off to sweet-talking Rutherford. He wasn't as evil as Ammon, but he creeped me out. All that smiling and good cheer and the ha-ha laughing made me want to kick him in the knee. Not to mention, I was pretty sure I lacked the sweet-talking gene. I need to go home and lie down or throw up or something, I said. Chapter 25. It was 5 in the morning. I was at the bakery, and so far my day was looking good. I had woken up to a house that felt relatively normal, just Cat and me in the velvety darkness. Diesel had patched my doors the night before so they would at least stay closed. He promised to get me new ones today. My kitchen felt welcoming when I switched the light on. No sign of Mammon, no Rutherford, no Wolf. Clara bustled in and went to her workbench. 4 dozen cupcakes for Mr. Dooley today, she said. 4 dozen cupcakes coming up. She looked over at me. Have you heard any more about Ammon?
So far as I know, he's in the hospital with a concussion.
You seem very chipper today.
I know. I woke up feeling terrific, and everything has been perfect this morning. Perfect coffee, perfect toasted bagel, every light was green on the way to work. I gave up a huge sigh of contentment. It's going to be a good day.
Glow showed up a couple hours later. She was all in black, including lipstick and nail polish.
You look like goth girl, I said to her. I'm in mourning. The 8-ball died.
Gee, that's awful, I said. Sorry. Yeah, condolences, Clara said.
I sort of expected it, Glow said. He'd been leaking for a while. And to tell you the truth, I'm not so sure he was magical. Still, it's sad. I paid $2 for that 8-ball. You'd think for that kind of money he would have lasted longer.
Glow took a tray of almond croissants out to the shop and unlocked the front door. Jenny Bell came in for a blueberry muffin, and Mrs. Kuzak bought a loaf of rye. I moved on to cookie dough, and I heard Nurgle's voice at the counter.
Hey, Glow yelled back to me. Guess who's here?
Nurgle smiled and gave me a finger wave when I came to the counter. I felt like a cupcake this morning, he said. Red velvet? I asked him. Yes, I'll take 2, and a lemon chiffon.
Wow, you must be having a good day.
A suicide, an accidental overdose, a gang-related shooting, and Quentin Devereaux was found on the side of a road, and it's only 9 in the morning.
I gave Nurgle his 3 cupcakes in a little box and pulled him aside. Tell me about Devereaux.
He was gutted, but all of his organs had been shoved back in, and that wasn't the way he died. It happened sometime after death.
His last thoughts?
Be sure to drink your Ovaltine.
Nurgle gave me his credit card.
Sometimes last thoughts don't make a lot of sense.
I gave the card back to him. No charge for the cupcakes, I said. I owed them to you.
Thanks. It was nice seeing you again. Let me know if you ever want to see an autopsy or go out to dinner or something.
I returned to my cookie making and was about to slide the first tray into the oven when Rutherford knocked politely on the side door and let himself in.
It's gone, he said. Poof, gone.
He was pacing back and forth, wringing his hands. Everything was perfectly ironed and in place. His hair was slicked down. His pants had a razor-sharp crease. His tie was expertly tied. His expression was sheer panic.
I went to check on our guest, Mr. Hatchett, last night. I had to make sure he had enough oxygen, and he wasn't there. Nothing was there. The door was locked. The vault was locked. But nothing was there. How could that happen? I went back this morning to see if anything had changed, but it hasn't. It's all gone.
And? I asked. Rutherford stopped pacing.
It had to be magic. There's no other explanation. Mr. Ammon and I were the only ones who knew the combination. Mr. Ammon is in the hospital. He's hooked up to tubes and things. He never left. And I'm pretty sure it wasn't me who opened the vault. I guess I could have had a moment, but I don't think that's it.
You think it's magic?
Yes. So of course I thought of you and your friend. She could have put a spell on the vault.
Did the vault growl at you?
No.
Then it wasn't glow.
I see your point, Rutherford said. Then it must have been Mr. Hatchett. He clearly has a strong magical component.
More pacing.
This is very bad. Mr. Ammon is in the hospital. The Prince of Avarice is waiting at the threshold, and I failed them. This happened on my watch. They're going to be very disappointed in me.
Glow had come into the kitchen.
What happens when they're disappointed? She asked.
I don't know, Rutherford said. I've never disappointed them at this level. This is big. I think something catastrophic might happen. Biblical, even.
Wow, Glow said. Biblical is huge.
Rutherford nodded.
I would prefer to avoid it.
I can ask Hatchett, I said. I might be able to talk him into making a deal.
Rutherford looked like he might explode with happiness. Really? What kind of deal?
He leaned forward and whispered at me.
I would be willing to do anything. Anything.
That covers a lot of ground, Clara said.
Would you have something to trade for the treasure? I asked Rutherford.
I have a car. It's a Ford. Very reliable.
Hatchett might not care about a car. Hatchett lives to serve his master, Wolf. He would want something that would make Wolf happy. It would have to be something unique, something Wolf might desire.
Gosh, I don't know, Rutherford said. I've never had the pleasure of meeting Wolf.
What about the stone? I said to Rutherford. It's not nearly as valuable as the treasure, but Wolf might like it.
The Avaritia stone? The stone of avarice? The stone that will set Mammon free?
You don't really believe all that, do you? I asked him.
I don't know. Mr. Ammon believes it.
Yes, but so far it hasn't done squat for him. I mean, let's face it, it's just a stone.
Maybe.
Do you know where the stone is hidden?
Not exactly. We put it in a safe place, but it isn't there anymore. I think Mr. Ammon re-hid it.
Do you know where he re-hid it?
I have my suspicions.
Which are? Rutherford smiled his big, wide Rutherford smile.
Lately, since Mr. Ammon is sometimes dog-like, he likes to dig in the flower beds at Cupiditas.
My first reaction was to burst out laughing, but I checked it and simply nodded at Rutherford.
If you could find the stone, I think I might be able to get the treasure back into the vault before Ammon realizes it was stolen.
Oh, wow, Rutherford said. That would be amazing. That would make Mr. Ammon very happy.
And the Prince of Avarice, Glow said. He'd be happy, too.
Yes, yes, Rutherford said. It would be excellent. The Prince of Avarice is very big on treasure.
I gave Rutherford a chocolate cupcake and ushered him out the door.
Let me know when you find the stone, and I'll get in touch with Hatchett.
Thank you so much, Rutherford said. Thank you, thank you.
Pretty slick, Clara said when I closed the door on Rutherford.
It's not a given that he can find the stone, I said. Clara went back to bagging the fresh bread.
He'll have every member of Ammon's household staff out there digging up the garden.
Diesel strolled in at noon.
I got word on Ammon, he said. He's still in the hospital. They were going to release him, but they found him drinking out of the toilet bowl and decided the concussion was more serious than they'd originally thought. So he's there for another day.
I told him about Rutherford, and Diesel grinned.
Good work, Diesel said.
We'll see, I told him. There's no guarantee that Ammon buried the stone.
True, but it'll give Rutherford something to do.
Diesel helped himself to a cookie.
I have a small job to do for the Exalted One, but I'll be back for dinner.
Who's the Exalted One?
My boss.
Does he have a name?
Sydney.
Last name?
I don't know his last name.
He gave me a kiss on the top of my head and walked out of the shop. I see what you mean about this being a good day, Clara said when Diesel left. If he kissed me, I'd think it was a good day, too.
I finished up a batch of cookies, cleaned my workstation, and headed for home. I stopped at the store and got steak and baking potatoes for dinner. I rolled into my house a little after 3. Rutherford knocked on my back door 10 minutes later.
So sorry to bother you, he said. I thought you would want to know that we're planning to bring Mr. Ammon home late tomorrow morning. He seems much improved.
Not drinking out of the toilet bowl anymore?
None of that, I'm happy to report.
He looked over my shoulder at the food on the counter.
Steak and baked potatoes, excellent choice for a meal. I see you're expecting a guest.
Diesel.
Of course, I imagine he more or less lives here.
More or less. Rutherford clasped his hands together and went serious.
About the treasure. Have you located it? Is a trade actually possible?
Yes, and yes.
He looked around. I don't suppose you have it here?
No, I'm just a go-between.
Of course, again.
Have you found the stone? I asked him.
Ah, that's the thing. It seems that without your special ability, all stones look alike. We have, in fact, found many stones that are the appropriate size. Unfortunately, I don't know if any of them are the stone. I was wondering if you would come out to the car to examine the rock collection.
You brought them with you?
It seemed like the least I could do since you're helping me get the treasure back. I wouldn't want to inconvenience you any more than is necessary.
A black Cadillac Escalade was parked at the curb. The back gate was open, and 2 suited henchmen stood on either side of the SUV. I peeked inside at 3 boxes of rocks. That's a lot of rocks, I said to Rutherford.
There are a lot of flower beds.
I put my hand to the rocks one by one. None of them were empowered. Sorry, I said.
I don't suppose you would want to give me the treasure anyway, Rutherford said.
I don't have it. Someone else has it.
Someone who wants a stone.
Yes.
Couldn't you give them one of these?
I don't think that would work out. Rutherford packed up and left, and I returned to my house where Cat was waiting. No luck, I said to Cat. They were all just plain old rocks. Cat looked at me with his one eye, thought about it for a beat, and gave his foot a lick. Well, I had to look, I said to Cat. You never know. The stone could have been there. Cat looked like he didn't think so. I stashed the food in the fridge, and Nurgle called on my cell phone.
I have something to show you, he said. I went to the bakery, but you'd already left.
What is it?
You have to see it in person. I'd bring it over to you, but I don't know where you live.
I gave him my address, and 20 minutes later, he was at my door. Are you done with work for the day? I asked him.
I'm on call. My job is like that. Anyway, I went to that specialty grocery store that just opened on 5th Street. They have an amazing deli. The egg salad has lots of mayo, and the tuna salad is full of celery.
I know the store you're talking about. They make their own terrine out of olives and bologna. It's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm in there, and I'm walking around, and what do I see? Lizzie's cookies. I'm sure you know all about this, but I was excited. These are my favorite cookies. Mint chocolate chip.
He handed me a bag.
And now I can buy them at the grocery store.
I pulled a packet of cookies out of the bag. They had the Ammon Enterprises logo on them. In small black letters under the large black and gold logo, it said Lizzie's Cookies. I opened the packet and tried one. This is great, I said. These are my cookies, all right. Except I didn't feel great. I felt deflated, like someone had let all the air out of my balloon. I'd given away my cookie recipe to a man who was trying to turn into a demon. I read the ingredients label. Red dye number 17, and something I couldn't pronounce. If I stabbed myself in the eye with the butcher knife, it would be less painful.
There were a bunch of other Lizzie's cookies there, too, but I only bought these, Nurgle said. They were pricey, and coroners don't make all that much money.
I led him into the kitchen, cracked open a bottle of red wine, and poured out 2 glasses. I heard the front door open and close. Carl raced in, and Diesel followed. Theodore brought me cookies, I told Diesel.
They're Lizzie's cookies, Nurgle said. I found them in the grocery store.
Diesel took a cookie from the bag and ate it.
Yep, they're Lizzie's cookies, all right.
He looked over at me.
No wonder you're drinking.
We're celebrating, I said.
Diesel grinned. I bet.
Nurgle's phone buzzed with a text message.
Geez, he said, they're dropping like flies today. I have to go.
I added a couple of my chocolate peanut butter chip cookies to his bag and handed it back to him. Thanks for stopping by to show this to me, I said. We'll have to get together sometime when you're not on call.
Yeah, that would be great, Nurgle said. I bet you have all sorts of fun stories about your adventures to save the world and everything.
I closed the door after him and drained my wine glass. He's going to get another text tonight, I said to Diesel, because I'm going to kill Ammon.
Ammon didn't waste any time getting these cookies into production.
They have artificial ingredients. He added coloring and preservatives.
No one will notice. The writing on the bag was very small. It's the American way.
It's not the American way. The American way is to have quality and purity. Diesel refilled my wine glass.
I like your thinking, he said. What's for dinner?
Steak and potatoes.
I really like your thinking.
I went to the kitchen, turned the oven on, and put the potatoes in. Would you still like me if I couldn't cook?
Yeah, you're cute. Cooking is the icing on the cupcake.
Okay, suppose I wasn't cute. Suppose I was fat and ugly. Would you like me then?
Let me get this straight. You can't cook and you're fat and ugly?
Yeah.
Are you mean?
No, I'm nice. I put an onion on the chopping block and started to slice it.
What about special talents? He asked. Are you good in bed? Can you give a deep tissue massage?
Good grief.
I'm just trying to get a grip on this, Diesel said. Suppose the situation was reversed and I was fat and ugly. Would you still like me?
Half the time, I don't even like you now.
I get that. But what about the other half?
I don't know. What are your skills? Can you give a deep tissue massage?
Honey, I'm going so deep on you tonight, I might not be able to find my way out.
I almost sliced my finger off.
Looks like you nicked yourself, Diesel said. Want me to kiss it and make it better?
No, I want you to go into the living room and watch television with Carl. I'll call you when dinner is ready. Chapter 26. The dinner dishes were in the dishwasher, the kitchen was clean, and we were watching a ball game drag on between the Red Sox and the Mets. Diesel stood and stretched. When he stretched, he raised his arms and his t-shirt rode up, giving me a glimpse of tanned, perfectly defined abs. I'd seen them before, plus a lot more, but it didn't matter. It was always good.
Do you need anything from the kitchen? He asked.
Nope, I'm okay, I said. Diesel ambled off. And Rutherford called me.
I found it. I found the stone. I know it's the stone because it's in the leather pouch. It was buried under an azalea bush. How soon can we get the treasure moved back to the vault?
I'll need at least a couple hours to gather it together. I'll call you when we can arrange the transfer.
Remember, we need to do this before Mr. Ammon is released from the hospital.
No problem. I'll get back to you later tonight. Diesel returned to the living room with a couple cookies.
What's up?
Rutherford found the stone. He wants to make the trade tonight so everything is in place when Ammon leaves the hospital tomorrow morning.
Call Clara and ask her to bring the van to Gramps' garage.
Clara was waiting for us when we pulled up to the garage. The van was parked inside.
We have a problem, Clara said. Follow me.
We entered the tunnel through the garage and walked the short distance to the speakeasy. The door was open, and Gramps was inside, sitting in one of the comfy club chairs.
Howdy, Gramps said. Welcome to my rumpus room.
We looked around and immediately saw the problem. The treasure was gone. Only one plastic bin was left. What happened to all the bins? I asked.
Got rid of them, Gramps said. They were taking up too much space. Kept the one that had the pretty green jar in it.
Where'd the bins go? I asked him.
I gave them to the pirate museum. They had a fire and lost a lot of stuff. Terrible. The pirate ship burned up and everything. The junk in the bins looked like pirate loot, so I handed it over. Pirates are my second favorite thing. When I gave all that junk over to the museum people, they said they were going to name a room after me. Can you imagine that? I'm going to be famous.
Diesel was back on his heels, smiling.
Easy come, easy go, he said.
What are we going to do about Rutherford? I asked him.
We'll give Gramps the pretty green jar and give the rest of the bin to Rutherford, Diesel said. If he doesn't want to hand over the stone, we'll jump him and take it.
Suppose he has a bunch of armed men with him.
We'll wait until he's alone and then we'll jump him.
Okay, I said. I like it. I called Rutherford and told him to meet us at the front entrance to the bank building Ammon owned.
Excellent, Rutherford said. This is a wonderful plan, a lifesaver, literally.
I disconnected and turned to Diesel. He's losing it. He did two of those awful ha-ha laughs, two. There was definitely hysteria involved.
With good reason.
We loaded the single bin into Clara's van and drove to the bank building.
Keep the motor running, and if I give you the sign, you take off, Diesel said to Clara. Lizzie has to verify that we've actually got the Avaritia stone before we hand over what's left of the treasure.
We sat there at idle for 10 minutes before a black Escalade drove up, and Rutherford got out, followed by two men in suits. The street was dark, lit by pools of light from streetlights. Rutherford stood at the building's front door, and the two men stayed by the car. Diesel and I got out of the van and crossed the street. Rutherford took in a huge, deep breath and exhaled.
Well, this is such a relief. Oh my goodness, you can't imagine what this means to me. This is large. Massive.
He leaned forward and lowered his voice.
This will be our little secret. No need to let the men know the full extent of the transaction.
Understood, I said. Do you have it? He turned his back on the men and carefully extracted the leather pouch from his suit jacket.
We need to be discreet about this, he said, handing the pouch over to me.
I opened the pouch and looked inside. It was hard to tell on the dark street, but the stone was the right size, and I could see some silver glinting off it. I touched it with my fingertip and felt nothing. Uh-oh, I said. I dropped the stone out of the pouch into my hand. Nothing. It's not the stone, I said.
Rutherford looked stricken. What do you mean? Of course it's a stone. I found it in the garden. It was in the leather pouch.
Sorry, I said. It's a dud.
Oh, you're pranking me, right? You're kidding. That's marvelous. I love it.
No, I'm really sorry. This isn't the stone. I put the stone back into the pouch and handed it over to Rutherford.
Oh, dear, he said. Oh, dear, oh, dear.
He stumbled back and sat down hard on the cement step leading to the bank's front door. I looked down at him. Are you okay?
I'm a dead man, he said. I lost the treasure. I lost the weird little guy with the red hair, and I can't find the stone. I'm done. Dead. Maybe worse than dead.
You have a couple hours, I said. You could keep digging.
We've dug up everything. There's nothing left to dig. The yard looks like it's been bombed.
He looked up at me.
You have to give me the treasure. Please. Please, please, with sugar on it.
The truth is, there's not much left, I said. We could only recover one bin.
Truly?
Yes.
Only one bin. You mean it's all gone?
I nodded.
Gone? Where did it go? Wait, I don't care. Doesn't matter, does it? It's gone.
Okay, you should calm yourself, I said. It's not that bad. Things happen.
No, no, you don't understand. This is Mammon we're talking about, the god of greed. He doesn't like when he loses treasure.
It's not Mammon, I said. It's Martin Ammon. What's the worst that can happen?
I don't know. Anal probes?
Maybe he still has the trank gun in the car, Diesel said. We could plant one on him.
We're going to leave now, I said to Rutherford. If you find the stone, you can call any time.
Yes, yes, I'll do that, of course. Yes, yes.
Diesel and I walked calmly across the road, got into the van, and told Clara what happened. Drive off as if everything is perfectly normal, I said to Clara. We don't want to alarm the men with the guns, and we especially don't want the crazy man who's pacing back and forth in front of the building to go completely gonzo.
Too late, Diesel said. That ship has sailed.
Now what? Clara asked, winding her way around Salem.
I guess we take the treasure back to Gramps, Diesel said. He's the expert at treasure redistribution.
It was hard to drag myself out of bed in the morning. It had been a late night. Diesel was warm next to me. Cat was curled at the foot of the bed. Carl was in the laundry basket. I oozed out from under the quilt, trying not to disturb anyone, and shuffled into the bathroom. I stood in the shower until the room was steamy and I was pretty much awake. When I finally tiptoed out of the bathroom, Carl and Diesel were still asleep. Cat was at the door, waiting for me. Kat and I went downstairs and I fixed Kat's breakfast. My life is a big mess, I said to Kat. I set drapes on fire and lose treasures and hook up with the wrong men. And I'm not just talking about romantic hookups. I'm talking about cookbook hookups, too. Kat didn't seem especially concerned. Kat was happy to have his half can of cat food. I was a half hour late getting to the bakery, and Clara had already started the yeast dough.
I'm not up to saving the world after 8 o'clock at night, Clara said. Just take the keys next time you need the van.
I'm hoping there won't be a next time. It seems to me we're at a dead end with the Avaritia stone.
Ammon must know where it is.
I'm not sure what Ammon knows. I'm told dogs don't have good short-term memory. At 11 o'clock, I was finishing the frosting on a batch of cupcakes, and Glow stuck her head in the kitchen.
He's here, Glow said.
Who?
Martin Ammon. He wants to see you.
I made my way to the counter and tried my best to smile. Hey, I said. How's it going?
I had a concussion. Nothing serious, but they wanted me to stay in the hospital for observation. I'm sure you heard.
I nodded. Yep.
I'm on my way home, but I wanted to stop by and personally invite you to the house to discuss the cookbook. We've gotten behind schedule.
You still want to publish my cookbook?
Of course. It's a large part of the campaign. We have decisions to make. We need cover art and an author photo. I was thinking 3 o'clock. Does that work for you?
More head nodding. 3 is good. We all watched him leave. He walked out on 2 legs and climbed into the back seat of a black Mercedes sedan. He didn't bark or lift his leg on the tire. It looked like Rutherford was at the wheel.
You aren't going to his house, are you? Clara asked. It could be a trap.
Yeah, Glow said. Mammon could be waiting for you.
He didn't look like Mammon, I said.
He didn't look like a dog either, Glow said, but I wouldn't wear a rabbit jacket around him.
He caught me off guard, I said. I'll send him a text and tell him something came up. Chapter 27. At 1 o'clock, I tossed my chef coat in the laundry bin, hung my tote bag on my shoulder, and waved goodbye to Clara. See you tomorrow, I said.
Hope so,
Clara said. I walked to my car and realized Rutherford was hovering a short distance away.
A moment, he said.
Sure. I guess Ammon understood about the missing treasure.
Oh, of course. Well, actually, he doesn't know. Just not enough hours in the day to get to everything. Lots of time to tell him about the treasure. Lots of time. The more pressing issue is to schedule a meeting between the two of you. Mr. Ammon received your text and was very disappointed. Perhaps you would be able to attend a meeting later today, 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock, perhaps?
No.
No? That's a good one. Just no.
He smoothed out his tie.
The thing is, Mr. Ammon has tasked me with ensuring your presence at Cupiditas sometime today.
It's not going to happen. Rutherford pressed his lips together. He removed his pocket handkerchief and waved it, and 4 men in suits appeared out of nowhere. One of them tagged me with a stun gun. There was a loud buzzing in my head, and my legs collapsed. I was scooped up and tossed into the back of an Escalade. By the time my nerve ending stopped tingling and my muscles started working again, I was at Martin Ammon's doorstep.
Oh my, that was something, wasn't it? Rutherford said,
smiling wide, like this had been the fun experience of a lifetime.
I've never seen that before. Very impressive display of weaponry.
You're an idiot.
Yes, yes. I've heard that before.
He motioned to the men.
Help Miss Tucker into Mr. Ammon's office. He would like to have a moment with her before the ceremony.
Ceremony? Rutherford pressed his hands together. Hard to tell what it signified since he was always grinning. Glee? Terror? Nervous excitement?
Yes, he said. Finally. This is the day we've all been waiting for. This is to be the rebirth of Mammon. Very exciting. Very wonderful. Yes, indeed. Big day. Big, big.
You found the Avaritia stone.
Mr. Ammon knew exactly where he'd left it. It was in his sock drawer. Imagine, it just brings a smile to my face.
I went slack-jawed. Didn't he know his face was in a perpetual grin? The man looked like the Joker. He had to have cheek muscles that could crack a walnut. I was marched into Ammon's office and placed in front of his desk, like a 7-year-old standing in front of the principal. The security force in Rutherford retreated to the far wall and stood at parade rest.
"Miss Tucker," Ammon said, "I'm glad you could find time for this meeting. It's really very important to me. I like to keep everything neat and tidy. Now that I'm recovered from my concussion, I thought we should have this meeting prior to the ceremony. I want your mind to be at ease. As you know, I have your signed contract, which gives me total control over everything you've ever owned or created. In fact, I've already begun to produce products under your brand. So you can rest easy when you're gone that your legacy will live on."
"You put coloring and preservatives into my cookies."
"It makes the product much more cost-effective. When I put your picture on the label with all your wholesome blondness, the consumer will never think to check the label. It's genius, isn't it?"
"It's awful."
"Now that you understand all this, we can move on to the real reason you're here. The holy ceremony to release our Lord Mammon requires that all elements be in place at the time of the ceremony. We need the human who carries Mammon and will assume his very soul. That would be me. We need the Avaricia stone. I have it here on my desk. And, as you can see, I also have the coin and the blue diamond. At the last moment, we realized we'd completely forgotten about the diamond. Fortunately, we were able to locate it in your kitchen."
"We didn't want to disturb you while you were at work," Rutherford said. "I was sure you wouldn't mind if we looked around your house. We were very careful not to disturb anything, although I'm afraid we did slightly destroy your door, but we'll reimburse you for the repairs. And goodness, your cat is quite ferocious. Ha ha, he's quite the attack cat."
"You better not have hurt him," I said.
"Oh, no, no, no. Goodness, he's a delightful creature. I gave him a bite of muffin before we left. I hope that was all right."
"And last but not least," Ammon said, "we need to sacrifice a high priestess with special abilities. That will be you."
"Oh, boy. I'm not a high priestess," I said. "I'm a baker."
"You're too modest. Your abilities are apparent."
"You won't get away with this. You'll be arrested and sent to jail."
"I'll be Mammon. I'll own the world. I'll be untouchable."
"Yeah, but what if you don't turn into Mammon? You'll just be some nutcase who killed someone." I looked over at Rutherford. "You too." Rutherford wiped his hands on his slacks.
"Oh, good one. Very funny. That's why we're so fond of you."
"Take her away and prepare her,"
Ammon said. Prepare me? What did that mean? I had a man on either side of me, plus Rutherford.
"We have a lovely chapel in the basement," Rutherford said, guiding me out of Ammon's office. "We'll hold the ceremony there. It's nice and quiet, very private."
"So no one will hear me screaming?"
"Oh, goodness, you won't be screaming. It's a very moving ceremony. You'll be honored. You're a lucky young woman, very lucky."
"I'm surprised you're still here," I said to Rutherford. "It would be even worse for you if he actually turns into Mammon. Imagine how angry he'll be to learn he's lost that treasure."
"Oh, no, no, I'm sure he'll understand. And I've taken measures to get the treasure back. It's only a matter of time."
We went down a flight of stairs to a short hallway that led to a small vestibule. The floor was marble. There were candles lit in wall niches. Double doors led into a medium-sized room with stained glass windows. There was an altar and several rows of pews. To one side of the double doors was another single door. Rutherford opened it to a large powder room. A white gown had been draped over an elaborate gilt chair.
"We're ready to begin," Rutherford said. "This lovely white gown has been prepared for you."
"You're kidding."
"No, no, we're quite serious. Mr. Ammon has spared no expense to make this ceremony perfect. And once you're sacrificed to Mammon, you'll be a queen in his kingdom. It will be fabulous, just fabulous."
"I'm not putting the dress on."
"Oh, dear. Mr. Ammon will be disappointed, and there's no telling what Mammon might think. Honestly, I don't think you want to make Mammon angry. He is, after all, one of the 7 princes of hell."
"So here's an honest-to-gosh truth. I'm terrified, and all I can think to do is stall. Time is my friend, right? If I'm down here in this loony bin long enough, surely Diesel will find me." "Okay, I'll put the dress on, but I need privacy."
"Of course," Rutherford said. "Come out when you're ready."
After 5 minutes, Rutherford knocked on the door.
"How's it going?"
"I'm almost ready."
5 minutes more, and there was another knock on the door.
Do you need help?
No.
Everyone is in place.
Mammon's waited this long, he can wait a little longer.
That's why we love you. Wonderful sense of humor. Seriously, I'm going to have to send some men in to get you.
I blew out a sigh and dropped the white gown over my head. It looked like a choir robe with a plunging neckline. I stepped out of the powder room and stood in front of Rutherford.
You have your clothes on under the gown, he said. You were supposed to take your clothes off.
I don't want to take my clothes off.
Of course, I understand completely. Maybe no one will notice.
We walked into the chapel, and I noticed Hatchet was there. He was naked, hanging upside down from a hook in the ceiling.
Greetings, wench, Hatchet said. I fear you doth have thrown me under the bus.
Sorry, I said. I wasn't thinking. It was one of those spur-of-the-moment things.
You can take your place of honor here by the altar, Rutherford said to me.
I was trying to stay calm. I needed to be vigilant. If an opportunity arose for escape, I had to be ready. How is this going to happen? I asked Rutherford.
I believe Mr. Ammon has settled on strangulation. It's much less messy than a bullet or a knife. This is our first human sacrifice, so we're learning as we go.
How long are you going to have Hatchet hanging there?
Until he tells us where he hid the treasure.
He didn't hide the treasure. I lied to you. Diesel and I took the bins out of the vault and gave the treasure away.
Very admirable. Noble, even, that you should want to help, Mr. Hatchet. I would expect no less from you. A charming gesture.
Thou be a pig's behind, Hatchet said to Rutherford.
Yes, yes, good one, Rutherford said.
Martin Ammon entered and pretended not to notice Hatchet.
Her hands aren't tied, Ammon said to Rutherford. Honestly, what have you been doing all this time? Mammon is impatient.
Well, I was never instructed to tie her hands, Rutherford said.
Standard protocol is to tie the victim's hands, Ammon said.
My mistake, Rutherford said. I'll have them tied immediately.
He looked over at the four men standing guard at the door.
Charles, would you be so kind as to secure Miss Tucker for us?
Charles stepped forward, took a flexible plastic handcuff from his back pocket, and tied my hands behind my back. Rutherford smiled and looked expectantly at Ammon.
Much better, Ammon said, but she should be kneeling.
Rutherford rushed to my side and helped me kneel.
We can now begin, Ammon said very solemnly. Rutherford, clear the room.
Rutherford nodded to the four men standing to one side, and they silently left the room and closed the door.
Do you have the Book of Mammon?
Ammon asked Rutherford.
Indeed, Rutherford said, all smiles. Yes, yes, it's right here on the altar. Turn to the appropriate page.
And the Avaritia stone?
Also on the altar in its special container.
Ammon stepped forward and removed the stone from an engraved silver container, and I could see it was glowing a brilliant green.
Ah, Ammon said, I feel the power. Who am I, Rutherford?
Rutherford clasped his hands together.
You're a fallen angel. Yes, yes. You're the Lord God of Pandemonium, one of the seven princes of hell.
Suddenly it all makes sense, Ammon said. I always knew, of course. I always knew that I mattered more than others, that what I wanted was more important, that my desires were to be honored above those of others, that I was on a higher plane. I never said it aloud before this because, well, you know, I might have come off as a sociopath. I would have been misunderstood. But now I understand. I've always felt more important than others because I am more important. I am Mammon.
Well, technically, we haven't performed the ceremony yet, Rutherford said.
Get on with it then, Ammon said. Perform the ceremony of the opening of the gates.
Rutherford took the Book of Mammon off the altar and began reading.
O Mammon, I call upon you to welcome this sacrifice and take your place upon this earth.
He leaned forward toward Ammon.
This is where you kill her, sir.
Very well,
Ammon said.
Where's the garrote?
I thought you were bringing the garrote, Rutherford said.
Ammon rolled his eyes.
Idiot,
I'm the demon god. I can't be expected to bring my own garrote. Do we have a length of rope?
Ammon and Rutherford scanned the room. No rope.
Perhaps we could use my tie or my belt, Rutherford said.
Ammon shook his head.
That would be inappropriate.
Of course, Rutherford said. What was I thinking?
We'll have to shoot her, Ammon said. Give me your gun.
I don't carry a gun, Rutherford said.
Well, get one. Do I have to always think of everything?
Rutherford blinked and gasped, ran to the door and wrenched it open.
I need someone's gun, he said to the men waiting in the vestibule. I need it now.
He returned with a gun and offered it to Ammon.
I think you should do this, Ammon said. I have to be ready for Mammon to emerge.
Excuse me, what?
Shoot her.
Yes, yes. You want me to shoot her? Ah, well, this will be a new experience.
A trickle of sweat ran down the side of his face.
I don't, that is,
he aimed the gun at me.
Where would you like me to place the bullet?
Oh, for Pete's sake, in the head.
No, wait,
in the heart.
The heart? Are you sure? It's, behind a breast. And, let's see how we work this gun. I've never actually shot a gun before.
It's easy, Ammon said. You pull the trigger.
Rutherford's hand was shaking and sweat was dripping into his eyes.
Yes, yes, of course, but am I holding this correctly?
He turned to Ammon.
Do I, have the proper grip? I really think it would be best if you did this, sir. I don't feel entirely competent here.
Ammon's face went scarlet. His fists were clenched and his face was contorted with anger.
Just freaking pull the trigger and shoot her.
Ammon grabbed at the gun. There was a small, awkward wrestling match, and bang! Ammon's face went blank, and a red stain began to spread across his chest.
Oops,
Rutherford said. Ammon crashed to the floor, and Rutherford bent over him.
Mr. Mammon?
Rutherford asked.
Hello?
No one answered. Rutherford carefully placed the gun on the floor. He stood and smoothed his tie.
Oh, Rutherford said, backing up, moving toward the door. My bad. Well, I'm just going to leave now. I actually have a job offer in Tasmania, and, I might consider it. So, it's been lovely, and you have a fabulous day. The weather should be outstanding today. Outstanding.
Rutherford slipped out of the room and carefully closed the door behind him. Words were said in the vestibule, but I couldn't make them out. There was the sound of footsteps, and then it was quiet. I looked over at Hatchet. Okay, then, I said. That went well.
I think I have pooped myself, Hatchet said.
Chapter 28. The door opened and Diesel walked in.
Are you okay? He asked.
I nodded. I'd been running on bravado up to this point, but it was fast disappearing, getting replaced with a wash of relief that had me close to tears.
Who shot Ammon?
Rutherford, I said, not entirely intentional.
He was running out of the house when I arrived. Everyone was running out of the house. I grabbed him, and he said you were in the basement chapel, and you were lovely in your white gown and waiting for me.
The waiting part is true. Not sure about the gown, I said. Josh and Glow and Clara rushed in.
Whoops, Clara said, spotting Ammon. Looks like we're late for the party.
Diesel got Hatchet off the hook and dumped him onto the floor.
1,000 thanks, sire, Hatchet said. I fear I have no blood in the lower half of my body.
Josh was bent over Ammon.
Whoa, he's holding a rock. I bet it's a stone of avarice.
Josh took the stone away from Ammon.
You know, I always felt I was on a higher plane than everyone else, Josh said, holding the stone. And now I know why. It's because I really am superior. I was meant to own this stone. I was meant to own everything, to rule the world.
Good grief, I said. Someone take the stone away from him and put it in the silver box on the altar. Diesel removed the stone and dropped it into the box. He took a pocket knife out of his jeans, lifted me to my feet, and cut my cuffs away. A tear leaked out of my eye, and he wiped it away with his thumb.
Sorry I didn't get here sooner, he said, wrapping an arm around me, holding me close to him.
How did you know I was kidnapped?
Josh was standing in front of the bakery letting some tourists take pictures of him, and he saw Rutherford and his men drive off with you. He ran inside and told Glow, and Glow called me. I was on my way back from Boston when I got the call.
We were worried Diesel was too far away, so we jumped in Clara's van and took off to save you, Glow said.
Boy, have I got good friends or what, I said. Diesel looked over at Ammon. Nurgle's gonna love talking to this one.
I spent the night next to Diesel. The danger was over, but the fear stayed with me, and I didn't want to be alone. I didn't set the alarm, but in the morning I woke up on time anyway. The room was dark. Cat was at the foot of the bed. Diesel was still asleep. I crept out from beneath the covers, took a shower, and dressed in my usual uniform of jeans and a t-shirt. I went downstairs and made coffee. My kitchen was cheerful, and my world felt good again. Everything would be fine until another stone found its way to Salem. I fed Cat, and when I turned around, I was face to face with Wolf.
Good morning, Lizzie, Wolf said.
He was very close to me, and his personal space hummed with energy. You missed the finale, I said. His eyes were dark and intense, but his mouth curved into the hint of a smile.
We haven't seen the finale yet, he said. Hatchet filled me in on yesterday's ceremony, an inevitable outcome. Ammon was never meant to have the stone.
When Diesel and I went to bed, we'd hidden the silver box that contained the stone, the coin, and the blue diamond in the microwave. Wolf went to the microwave and took the silver box. He looked inside, seemed satisfied with what he saw, and snapped the lid closed.
Thank you for retrieving this for me, he said.
Diesel won't be happy to hear you broke in and took the stone.
My cousin understands that a deal was made, and I'm sure he knows I'm here.
The stone and the blue diamond are said to be cursed.
Then they're in the right hands.
Wolf smiled again.
I have a way with cursed things.
He stepped in and drew me close against him. His lips brushed mine. The kiss became more intimate, and I felt fire curl through me.
We have a mission to find the lost stones, Wolf said. There are four left. When the last stone is found, it will be our time, and I'll come to finish what I've started here.
He stepped back and poof, he was gone. I turned and saw Diesel lounging against a door jamb, arms crossed over his chest, hair still mussed from sleep.
I don't think so, Diesel said. This is Lorelei King. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Wicked Charms, a Lizzie and Diesel novel by Janet Ivanovich and Fief Sutton. Executive producer Dan Musselman. Text copyright 2015 by Ivanovich Inc. Production copyright 2015, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.